All right, we're really, really happy to have our next guest on. I don't think we've ever had him on before. We don't talk a lot about college football here, but we're all fans. And Pooley, you went to Notre Dame, coached at Notre Dame hockey, but still, you went to a lot of football games, and you're connected to the football program.
I went to a lot of games, absolutely.
You can find him at Fox Sports, writing at The Athletic. He's got a podcast out called The Audible. Here is football insider, college football reporter and insider Bruce Feldman. How you doing, Bruce?
I'm good. Good to be on with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. So, take us through, you know, your headspace with college football in general, and how you know, COVID-19 is going to have a ripple effect on this sport for the next year and a half. Where do you see this going?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think anybody knows for sure anything about where this could be a month from now, even. But I would say this, that a lot of the people, the power brokers around college athletics, are optimistic. Student athletes are returning to campus around most college programs early in June. Then there's going to be a period where it's for voluntary workouts, but a lot of the schools will test them at least when they return and quarantine them. And then hopefully the process will start to play out. And I think what a lot of people are worried about is, quite honestly, if there are some outbreaks and some positive tests and things of that nature, because unlike, let's say, golf or tennis, like college football, you're talking about not just about 100 players, but you're also talking about 30, 40 staff members, coaches, trainers, that sort of thing. So, and they're in close quarters, and football is a physical game. So I think there's a lot of things that make it complicated right now. And unlike other sports, there's really no centralized leadership that goes on in American college football. The NCAA is there, but it's not there to the degree it is. It doesn't, like, in the NCAA basketball tournament, the NCAA runs it. In college football, the playoffs, the NCAA doesn't have really anything to do with it. So it's really murky in that regard, and the NCAA hasn't really shown a lot of direction and leadership, quite honestly, in bringing the sport back. The other thing to keep in mind is college football is where all the money is for college athletics. It drives the bus for everything. So they need to have a season, or else at some point in 2020 or even 2021 to finish the season, or else it is going to have huge financial ramifications on colleges around the country.
Yeah, we had that conversation earlier, Bruce, about how it, you know, college football and to a lesser degree basketball and the tournament, which got wiped out this year, has just such a massive effect on every other sporting, you know, faculty and scholarships and just the sport in general surviving on college campuses, and I'm sure college football at this point is thinking not necessarily about their own survival, but making sure that they continue to prop themselves up. But is that coming up in circles? Like, hey, you know, yeah, we're going to be okay, but we got to get back on the field here to save field hockey or save the swimming team, or like how deep does it go in terms of their feeling of, you know, importance here because they know everyone else is relying on them?
I think that's the athletic directors. I think that is it. That is the elephant in the room. They know, and not only that, it's like there are millions and millions of dollars that are in these TV contracts. So one of the questions that comes up a lot will be, well, will there be fans in the stands? Will there be, you know, a fourth of capacity, half capacity? Who knows? The one thing I think that they will definitely try to have happen if they can is to have the games, and then they will sort out, okay, how many fans can we bring in? And I think what, you know, to get back to the original question at the start of this is nobody really knows for sure what this virus and reaction is going to look like, because only now are we starting to really kind of relax and open things back up. And one of the coaches I talked to the other day, whose school is one of the first that's coming back, bringing their players back, he said, look, there's a big difference between being back and back to normal. And, you know, for all the people looking to go, well, college athletes are 18 to 22, and, you know, that's a really, really low risk relative to the COVID-19 cases. And that is definitely true if you look at the numbers. The thing that doesn't get said as much when you talk to some coaches, and this has come up, though, is a lot of the staff members and coaches who are around the program, Nick Saban's almost 70. The head coach at Ohio U is 75. There's plenty of assistant coaches who are in their 60s and probably not in the best physical shape or have some kind of pre-existing conditions. So it is complicated, especially with, you know, most major sports, you're hearing a lot about testing and what the models are. I think a lot of college football programs, there are going to be some that can't afford to test. So, you know, yeah, there may be athletes who they'll say, oh, we're going to test when they show symptoms. But there are, we've heard plenty of stories of people who were positive, maybe carried the virus, but didn't have symptoms. So when you multiply that times 150, it's, you know, it could get a little messy here, and it could get scary. And so I think the big questions once they get into this is going to be, hey, there have been talk about what happens if we have to push pause on the season for a little bit. And what's going to have to happen is there's going to have to be contingencies and protocols, and those things, I think they're still trying to sort out on a case-by-case basis by school and by conference.
Bruce, your point about centralized leadership would have been my very first question to you, in that, you know, it's always been a sport where there's power brokers and there's, you know, powerful schools, and where does that lie? And, you know, I was at Notre Dame for a number of years, first as a student, then as a coach, then as an administrator, and saw it firsthand with the power conferences and everything that went on. Is communication at a whole new level with that group now because of this?
You know, it is. I mean, I've talked to ADs around the country, and they will have daily calls with the other ADs in their conference. One of the challenges to this, and this came up, I would say, probably a month in or so, I had a conversation with the head coach in the Pac-12 who had said, see if you can get a straight answer from somebody about who's going to make the call about how this is going to work and what we're going to do if and when we come back. And so when you ask people that question, they don't have a really strong answer. It's very murky. They say, hey, we're going to talk to some experts and we're going to lean on this. But as you know, as I'm sure you guys have seen, you know, everything feels like it's politicized. You know, and no matter which side you may look at things, you can't turn on the TV without saying, okay, what perspective is this being fed to me? And right now there's so much either cynicism out there. And I think something that's happened to some degree is just, look, there's a lot of uncertainty of where this thing is going. And so I think as they're trying to react to that, that has muddled it even further. I mean, I think there's plenty of people in college athletics who have the best intentions, but I think right now they're kind of caught flat-footed. I mean, on our podcast this week, I talked to Neil Brown. He's the head coach of West Virginia. And one of the questions I asked him was, do you think there will be some real issues if a program in your conference plays like an out-of-conference game and against an opponent that may not have tested their players? And so you're going to be playing football, which is obviously the most close-quartered game there is, lots of big rosters, and what that could mean and bring back. And he said, you know, as football coaches, you are so wired to have all the answers and to convey with conviction. And he said, it's hard sometimes to say this, but this is the reality, is I don't know. And there's a lot of stuff we don't know, and it has been hard for people to kind of come to terms or with that positioning of, we don't know right now, we got to wait for more data.
We're chatting with Bruce Feldman. You can read him at The Athletic. You can check out his podcast, The Audible, available everywhere you get your podcasts. If and when this season happens, and like you said, it feels like there's a lot of optimism out there, it's likely going to, you know, basically revolve around Trevor Lawrence and his pursuit of that first overall pick next year, and whether or not NFL teams are going to be kind of tanking for him. He's been on the scene a couple of years. He's put up monster years, as we know. Do you expect by this time next year, or even by the time we get to the draft, he will be getting the John Elway, Andrew Luck treatment? In other words, you know, lock number one superstar NFL quarterback, or is there still more to be proven here by Trevor Lawrence?
I think there's still more to be proven. You know, he would be my odds on pick to go in that direction. But look, if you had asked people at this point last year who would be the first pick, I don't think nobody, maybe other than Joe Burrow himself, would have said, oh yeah, it's going to be Joe Burrow. Most people thought that guy was going to be fifth, sixth round pick or something like that. And then he was a runaway choice, not just to win the Heisman, but to be the first pick in the draft. So is it conceivable that a guy like Justin Fields at Ohio State, who actually was higher ranked coming out of high school in a lot of people's eyes, could leapfrog him? Is it possible that Trey Lance, who's at North Dakota State, is not, you know, it's an FCS program, not FBS, but had this remarkable redshirt freshman year? Is it possible Trey Lance could be the guy who leapfrogged him? I did a story on The Athletic a couple of weeks ago about who could be that quarterback who really springboards high up into the discussion. And the more people I talk to between scouts and draft analysts and coaches, Trey Lance, again, he's a guy who's not even in FBS football, was the name that came up the most. So, you know, I'd encourage people, if you're not familiar with them, North Dakota State is the most dominant program in all of college football at the level they play at. They win pretty much every year. And this guy, you know, is following in the shoes, certainly, of Carson Wentz and some other really good quarterbacks who played there.
Well, we look forward to getting to the NFL draft, and hopefully there's a full college season prior to that ever happening. And we always appreciate you finding time for us. Good luck with the podcast, and we'll do this again down the road. Thank you, Bruce.
My pleasure. Great talking to you guys. Thank you.
There he is, Bruce Feldman from The Athletic and his podcast, The Audible. So that's interesting. I mean, he said Trevor Lawrence, who, like, he came on the scene a couple of years ago, wins the national title with Clemson, goes to another title game last year, still kind of has to prove himself. And there's a couple of guys that maybe aren't getting as much love as they should be right now who could be in that position. And he mentioned Joe Burrow. It's a great example of a guy that, like, this time last year, no one was paying attention to Joe Burrow. And he put forth maybe the greatest year in college football history and was a lock to go first overall once he won that title game at LSU. So things change in a year.
You know, it's so funny with them coming back, because a number of schools haven't decided for sure they are going to have on-campus classes yet. I mean, some schools have, and some schools are actually going back early in August and going to class through Thanksgiving and then breaking for a month after that. So
anticipating maybe a second wave, Pooley, or something like that.
Exactly. And so the idea is get them on campus in early August, Jamie, have them there through Thanksgiving without going home at any point.
Right.
So almost keeping them on campus and in the area, then sending them home for Thanksgiving and leaving them at home through Christmas as things settle. But there are major, major universities that haven't decided they're going to have kids on campus in class yet.
But they're still
looking at virtual professors.
Yeah, you know, I thought virtual classes. There were colleges and universities in California that have been told already September classes are going to be virtual. So maybe that's just because of that situational, I guess, you know, those hot spots or whatever. But,
he spoke about the coaches, though, like the Nick Saban and guys like that.
Yeah.
And my daughter works at a major, major university. And she said one of their big issues is getting professors to come back on campus. Like the professors,
right?
They don't want to come back and be in a classroom full of kids.
Well, and that's exactly what Bruce said with coaches, right? You got guys who are in the 60s and 70s, and the players, the 20-year-old may not be too concerned and will likely be fine, but no guarantee the linebacker coach will, who's 68 and has an underlying condition. How do you make that work?
Yeah, you're a 70-year-old professor, and you're watching half your students go down to Florida for spring break, and coming back. Like, they
were at the Ozarks.
Exactly. Like, that's
you saw those.
You're
pictures.
Right. It's up to individual, I guess, everyone individually. But there's some people that will err on the side of caution. I don't disagree with that.
Big time, as they should. That's totally within their right.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, things have shifted and things have changed over the past two and a half months since we've been in this COVID bubble riding this wave, whichever way you want to describe it. And I'm sure we'll be in a very different spot 3-4 months from now.
We will.
Like Bruce said, everyone's saying the same thing. Like, I don't know. I don't know when we're going to play. I don't know how we're going to play. I don't know what it's going to look like. Who knows where the world is
going to
be.
But the big issue in that sport, Brian, is who makes that decision? And that's what he said.
Exactly.
Like, you've got respective commissioners of the Big 12, the Pac-10, Pac-12 now, whatever. But boy, oh boy, there isn't a person. There's not an Adam Silver. There's not a Gary Bettman to say, here's what we're doing, guys. here's what the format is.
Well, and this actually, in a way, may be what leads to the demise of the NCAA, because there's been a belief for quite some time that a lot of the like big power schools would prefer to just break loose and do their own thing, right? And just get rid of the restrictions, change the rules, work out their own deals with the big networks, ESPN, Fox, CBS. And like, why do you even need the NCAA? They don't bring anything to the table. It's just that's the way it's always been done. But I this might lead to that. Like, if someone's got to take charge, or they realize that, you know, the emperor has no clothes here, maybe you just say, all right, we're breaking loose. Like, this is it. The iceberg, we're going a different route, and we're going to all come together. There's going to be, you know, whatever it is, 25, 50 schools, and we're going to create our own thing.
Yeah.
And tremendous pressure on the governing body, the NCAA, right now, to tremendous pressure. And there has to be a decision maker for so many different things. We're talking about football. You know, there are, I think, I don't know what the total number is. We had 26 sports at Notre Dame. I think there's 38 or 40 different sports that are competed in by the NCAA.
Right. Yeah. Wow. And also there's such a pecking order, as we all know, and as we've been detailing this hour, like football, they know. Like, they're aware of it, and and the big schools know what they're really worth. Like, when these TV deals get brokered, like Notre Dame and NBC, NBC's been paying a fortune.
It's an exclusive contract.
Ever.
Exclusive contract.
Yeah. Exactly. So Notre Dame knows what's up. Like, they don't need help. Like, their brand has been established.
They're one of the unique teams that's not in a conference. They have an affiliation with the ACC, but they're not in a conference.
Right.
So they're a whole different animal.
They're just an
island. They don't know.
No, exactly. But like Alabama, they know. Like, they're going to survive with or without the NCAA. Alabama football is going to survive.
Well, look at the SEC in itself. The SEC, talk about. I mean, they've been at the top of the game now for the last number of years in terms of everything about it.
Yeah.
Financially. Performance, everything about it.
Yeah, big time.